Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Bill Curtis, the unmistakable voice, America's anchorman, a legend in broadcasting, just launched the 13th season of American Greed on CNBC. And to talk about it all is the man that introduces our history segment every week here on WGN Radio, and that's Bill Curtis himself. Welcome, Bill.
Well, I'm not history yet.
No, you're not. You are not. You are not.
But coming close.
Nah, not at all. Not at all. Hey, I loved American Greed for years. I think it's just a spectacular show. Just some great journalism, of course. Tell folks who haven't seen the show, Bill, what American Greed is all about.
Everybody has a little greed in them. Maybe all people, given the offer of, would you take this money, or looking at a $100 bill on the sidewalk, do you have to decide whether to keep it or turn it into the police?
Keep it.
If you keep it, that's greed.
Yeah, we all have.
We've turned that into a story and a series of stories, almost like cold case files. A repository, there will always be crimes and cold cases that we can't solve. Well, there will always be greed. And so the FBI helps us, local law enforcement helps us, and we think that, at least I do, that these stories are great instructive lessons on what to avoid and what to look for. Ponzi schemes on the one hand, and the one coming up Monday is especially interesting. It is Lyle Jeffers. Jeff's actually, J-E-F-F-S. And he has carried on what his father started in polygamy out in Utah. Warren, his father, had 60 wives. And it wasn't, in reality, it wasn't a religious farm, although he tried to claim that it was.
Right.
But he was running his own private polygamous operation. And in doing that, while he was trying to make money, he developed his son, who is now in jail, Lyle, developed a scheme by which, his wives, that number in the teens, could qualify as recipients of welfare. Mm-hmm. Plurality and plural wives is not recognized legally in Utah. So he said, okay, if they're not legal, then they're, able to draw down some welfare checks. Lo and behold, if he would have them go in, they would collect the food stamps, but not buy any food. They would bring the money back to Lyle and the officers of the ranch, and they racked up, I got to tell you, a good sizable war chest. And they were a little hungry along the way because they weren't getting
that's
food
crazy
to go with it.
Yeah,
but they put away $12 million.
Wow.
By this illegal scheme. And Lyle had his wives, too. So the FBI got a hold of it. First of all, Lyle goes to a prison primarily for marrying an underage young woman. And the FBI gets ahead of it, wind of it as a fraud on federal law. And so they got him, and there he goes. So the whole thing is sort of continuing out there, but they don't have the leadership, and it's kind of waning away. But it's that kind of fraud that you find so many places. People are out there trying to figure out how to make money, easy money from the feds.
Well, what's wild is that First of all, these episodes that have already aired in the 13th season, you can watch the full episodes at CNBC.com. The new episodes air on Mondays. Your first episode of the season is what immediately captivated me because it was, you know, really ripped from the headlines right now is Paul Manafort. And, you know, you heard bits and pieces, Bill, of course, in the news, but this story and this episode really brought it all together.
We identify with it. I mean, you do more than I. I'm not as young as you, but he was an up-and-coming young man. He had a good background, good education. And he started working in government as a lobbyist. He called it an influence peddler, which he didn't think was illegal. Nothing wrong with that. But he realized that if he associated himself with power, he could sell that association to people who wanted certain things. Legislation, let's say. The oil companies, fossil fuel, pharmaceuticals. And make very, very good money. He then, when Republicans, he served Reagan and others, when they were out of power, why, what is he going to do? So he decides, well, I'll go to a foreign source. And the Ukraine was over there. Now, the Ukraine is willing to pay more money in Czechoslovakia than we in the United States. And so he is suddenly making millions. He has his little company. That company is doing very well. And the problem, he could have gotten away with it if he had maintained control. But it kind of went to his head. And he had never had this kind of money before. Suddenly, his weaknesses of clothes, Rolls Royce, private jets flying here and there, living the high life.
Yeah, the greed just continues to grow. Like, it just, it's addictive.
Oh yeah.
It's addictive, and you can't stop.
You can't stop it. If people, you know, just say, hey, why didn't you just say, okay, I'm going to stop it. I'm going to get a nice log cabin on a river and spend the rest of my life enjoying these things. But no, it, he couldn't do it. And finally wound up going to jail where he is.
It's almost a bit of an illness, a little narcissistic as
yeah.
time grows, right?
Yeah. And suddenly your reasoning, your smarts can't work. And it just kind of gets, well, that's addiction. He's addicted to money. Others are addicted to opioids, heroin. And we all know what happens there because they can't stop.
Right. Investigative journalism, of course, Bill, has always been your calling card. You know, at what point of your life in the early days, because I know you were, you know, you got your degree in journalism, you got your law degree, you were in Wichita, you were covering a tornado there, it caught the eye of BBM. That's kind of when you hit the big time. But when did you know as a kid this is what you wanted to do? I mean, were you reading mystery novels? Were you just all over the news as a kid? Like, how did it all come about for you?
Well, there was news was not the same back when I was 16. I was going to graduate from high school in 1958, and Murrow had come back from covering World War II, and he had all his boys who had Eric Severi, Charles Collingwood, made big names, but radio still ruled the roost, and television was just beginning to grow. It wasn't until 1963 when Walter Cronkite got his half-hour show. And from that point, TV had to build a tradition. They had to show that they could get pictures to go with those radio reports. And CBS News was really founded and began building. As a matter of fact, it was the Otto Kerner report after some riots in Chicago that said, we live in a two-society country, black and white. And, you know, television has not yet achieved a tradition so that some of the techniques it was using, specifically in 1968, turning lights on during the demonstrations, things like that, need to be rounded out. And but since then, television has become the dominant source of news information in the country. And we are now facing another change, and that change is brought about by the Internet. And now we probably have a source on our phones that we will look at headlines and long pieces. We don't have the, well, we have some streaming. You can get that live coverage from the local TV stations, and it pops up. But most of us go back to the television set when we want, and we're forces, creatures of habit. At 6 and 10 and
sure.
You know, WGN
right.
starts at 4 to 4:30 in
oh, yeah.
the morning.
Oh, yeah.
And it's almost, they're almost to the point where they can run all day.
Oh, absolutely.
It seems like that.
I have
we're an information society.
I have an 18-year-old son who watches WGN.
When did I get the idea? Well, believe it or not, it was still when I was 16, my first radio job. And I didn't know exactly the path. I was too young to know all that, and the path wasn't settled. But I knew I have a deep voice.
Oh, yeah.
And I like broadcasting. I'm going to do my best to prepare, like a law degree, pass the bar in Kansas, and when I'm old enough and look old enough, I'll make the jump to television news.
Wow. That's amazing. Because, I mean, it was, you know, when BBM caught your eye they brought you onto the station. You weren't anchoring right away, were you?
No, I came on as a field reporter to get my feet wet about Chicago, but also learn the craft, the tools of the trade. We were shooting film, and the station was too. It was that that young. Katie Flynn had been doing the news for the Standard Oil, P.J. Hoff.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't remember these guys, but
I know the names. Oh, no, I remember Fahey and the Bow Tie. Oh, yeah, I remember these guys. I do.
Yeah, Floyd Calvert, John Chancellor, they all started here.
Wow. But then when they finally decided to pair you and Walter together, it was kind of an unusual experiment, even internally at the time that they were going to put you guys on. You know, eventually on the 10 o'clock news. They weren't sure if that was going to work.
Yes, they weren't. I mean, it was bold. You know, everything was a single anchor up to that point. I mean, Joel Daly and Fahey were knocking everybody down with their ratings. But in 1973, in order to compete with them, a new guy, Bob Wessler, came in as general manager, and Van Gordon Sauter as news director, and they say, why don't we get Curtis, who is a correspondent and a very straight guy, as our anchor, and pair him with Walter Jacobson, who was an assistant to Mike Royko. He was kind of the sharp edge to me, and we'll give him a commentary. He can speak for the little guy. He can say the things that Bill won't say. And it turned out to be this chemistry that we have enjoyed through the years. We're very close friends and enjoyed it. You know, I was the outside guy because I had been a correspondent with CBS News, covered the Manson trial. He was the inside guy with perspective, and it set quite a bar for those who would follow.
But, you know, you mentioned streaming like today, and I was going to mention my 18-year-old son, you know, the way he gets his news. Now, he'll watch WGN because I watch WGN. He'll listen to WGN because, well, first of all, I work here. But, you know, he'll catch the news through Snapchat, and I'll say, hey, did you hear about? And before I could finish my sentence, he'll say, you know, I got CBS news on my Snapchat, and I can get my headlines really quickly. So the content is still coming from the same place. The delivery is different. But at that time, with just a handful of channels, you know, there was no cable, no satellite, no streaming, none of that stuff, that half or more of the city was watching your newscast every single night. Pretty cool.
It is. There were only four stations in town, ABC, NBC, CBS, and WGN. And so we had probably 2 million people in Chicago watching television. And you're right. The old needle would swing over in terms of a viewing audience. that would leave whatever they were watching to tune in the 10 o'clock news. It was a grand time for us, and it was a good run. We enjoyed it.
As a journalist, a producer, anchor, what do you enjoy the most?
You know, I enjoy getting out and covering stories. I enjoy first learning, call it a clue or something, learning that there's a story out there that people should know. It could be a challenge to the way our government is operating, a watchdog, if you will. Could be a feature story. And when I ran into this in a deep way with the Agent Orange story, it was 1978 when I came across it. Maude DeVictor, working for the VA, had given me some names of veterans who were complaining they had symptoms that couldn't be answered or diagnosed. And I had a little focus unit, and we were able to kind of set everything aside, and we literally had to investigate whether or not our own defoliation efforts, Agent Orange, had injured our own troops. It was one thing to injure the enemy, but we never dreamed that we would have cancers come up, soft tissue sarcomas. And it was complex, because I've always felt that I have to be, before I go on with an investigative report, I want to be ready to go to trial, because if they start asking questions, I let it source properly. And we were solid. We went back and presented it to a Congress, a Congressional Committee, Armed Services Committee. And the VA was all ready to come in and blow us apart. After all, it comes from a local station. Why didn't the networks do it if it was really good?
Yeah.
Well, once we played an hour documentary that we had been working on, called Agent Orange, The Deadly Fog, and Abner Mitra, the congressman, was the one who set it up. The VA representatives absolutely turned 180 degrees and said, we'll do this, this, this.
Yeah.
In the end, today, 200,000 veterans have been compensated for injuries linked to Agent Orange, and 50 diseases have been linked to it. And it's still fresh.
Well, I was going to say,
still going on.
And it wouldn't have happened without, you know, the dedication, time, and digging deep and taking some risks in getting it done. And that's really why
reporting.
Yeah, that is reporting. I know I've shared this personal story with you before, but when I was about 11 years old, and that was in 77, 78, whatever that might be, very interested in the broadcast world, obviously. And a friend of mine of the family was a BBM cameraman for the 10 o'clock news. And he took my sister and I, along with my my mother, to witness the newscast. And so we got there at like 8:30. We watched you guys prepping for the show, doing your teases throughout the primetime shows that were airing. Passed by Walter's desk, where I was overwhelmed by the layers of stuff everywhere. Got to meet the both of you. I mean, this is, you know, 40 years ago. Took pictures with you guys, the weather desk, the weather map. It was such an incredible experience. But 11 years old, even at that age, I knew how important that show was.
Yeah, that's great.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah, that is fun.
Part of
that's
a legacy.
My favorite story, along with the guy who stops me, either on the street, and they're usually young men and women who have a similar experience in that they were able to watch the news if they sat by their parents in the living room at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they had to go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's awesome.
Just sitting there, first of all, they get the family together, togetherness feel.
Yeah.
At bonding. And second, they're informed. They said, hey, this is pretty interesting. And that made such, as it did with you, an impression that they live with it even today.
Absolutely.
So that's very, very satisfying. I'm glad to hear it.
Wonderful. And I mentioned Walter's office and his desk, but You've got a social media little series that you're doing, What's in Bill's Office. And I have to imagine over the years you've collected quite a bit of history in all these years in broadcasting.
Some people would call it a hoarder. And sure enough, I look down and blow the dust at 40 years off. Maybe not that long, but certainly 30. And I started saying when, you know, people would come in, oh, look at this. Well, this is the one comes from Trinidad. We were doing a global warming story. Well, this one was in Ecuador following missionary's son who grew up and went back to become the chief of the Kofan Indians. And I happened to bring back, you know, the bow and arrow set. So I said, well, somebody said, well, let's do a piece, you know, just tell these stories. And so
I love this.
It's kind of fun because you relive history. We're now up to 15 or 20. We'll be putting them on. And I said, well, yeah, we got to expand these. Do them a little better because they're off the top of my head. So you may see a better quality coming up, too.
I love that. Well, very cool. Well, the new season of American Greed, once again, folks, airs Mondays at 9 Central on CNBC. Bill, you know, it's always a pleasure talking about what you're doing now, talking about some of your history. You're a great guy for taking some time for us, and have a great week, pal.
Well, Dave Flyer, and let's see, he's history. No, you're not, but you got a history introduction from me.
Yeah, it's coming up. It's actually coming up after the break. I appreciate it again, pal. Thank you again.
Thank you, Dave.
That's great. Thank you, Bill. Yeah, no, you did this for us years ago. Dave Schwann and I do a half-hour history segment every week on the station, and your voice, your booming, fabulous, legendary voice comes out and introduces me and introduces Dave, and every week I hear it for the last 5 years. It does mean so much, so thank you again.
Well, great. Well, we'll do it again.
Okay, sounds great. Take care, Bill.